Welcome to the Rooted Woman Podcast. I'm your host, Bethany Wild, and I'm an author and mother. Here we have conversations on sovereign and instinctual womanhood and motherhood, cultivating thriving wellness, and much more. Listen to powerful birth and healing stories and topics on the wild woman experience. You can check out all I offer, including herbal elixirs for wild mothers and women, my book on pelvic healing, and all the show notes for these episodes at bethanywild.com. Now for the show. Welcome everyone to the Rooted Woman Podcast. I'm so glad that you all are here. I'm really excited to share this conversation here with Lindsay. Probably many of you know that I used to be a womb and pelvic body worker before I did continue to work with women after I became a mother, but it was that initiation that really changed my path a lot. And so, I wrote a book on pelvic healing. It's probably how many of you have found me here. But it was really nice to talk with Lindsay and connect in with these topics of pelvic healing and female embodiment. It really was such a great reminder of the fact that this is our center, and we truly, as women, store so much here. It's made up in our physicality, the energetics of us. And it really is some of the most important work that we can do in these times to connect in with our power center and release all the things that we don't want to carry there anymore and uncover what I find to be true, and also what Lindsay talks about as well, is this lightness and joy that is felt in the pelvic bowl. So she shares a lot of great wisdom. She shares her stories, and I think that a lot of you here will find these topics really also important and engaging and inspire you to develop some kind of practice to connect in with yourself too. I love tapping into the truth and reminding women of how simple this is, how intuitive it is. You know, it's like so many women feel like they don't know where to begin. And I think in those cases, it really can be helpful to have some kind of guide, a woman who can return you back to your knowing and your power and really make it simple for you and remind you that you don't need outside authority figures, but a guide is always beautiful. So I think Lindsay is that person. So we talk in this episode about the work that she does and the upcoming class that she has offering. At the time of this podcast release, it'll be this weekend, the 24th of February, 2024. But I believe she said that it'll still be available after that time. It just won't be at the early bird pricing. So, I think it sounds like a great class for a woman who wants to be walked through a pelvic connection practice. So we get into some really great topics. I'm going to keep this intro short for everyone. As always, if you are enjoying this podcast, I would love it if you left a review. Another great way to support me is through checking out my book. If any of these topics resonate with you and you want to deepen into feminine embodiment and womb and pelvic healing and connection and, you know, hear about more practices, my book, Pelvic Awakening, Connecting to Your Female Center for Transformation, Healing, and Joy, is always available on Amazon. I published it about, I'm trying to think, 3 years ago now, maybe? So that's available. And then my other offering for women who want to support me and who feel resonant with everything that I put out, I have an Etsy shop up with some herbal elixirs for wild women and mothers. So check that out. And everything we mention in this show and all the links for Lindsay's amazing classes are all in the show notes, so you can check everything out there. And again, thank you all for being here. It really means so much to have you here, have you listening, receiving the feedback that I do. It really fills my heart and helps me continue to put out these things that, these conversations and these stories that mean so much to me as a woman, as a mother. So let's now hear from Lindsay.
Okay, yeah, thank you so much for having me here. I'm excited to be speaking with you. And I got into this work mostly just because I had a lot of my own healing to do. I had sort of traumatic childhood, a lot of instability, and then a string of smaller traumas, some bigger traumas that happened in my kind of early 20s, and then was always really interested in the human body and slowly became more aware of how disconnected I was from women and the feminine and the earth. And the more those pieces came in for me, the more I just wanted to be in service to women and connected to the earth. And so I started to go to massage school and basically knew I wanted to be working in health, but also knew I didn't want to be a doctor or like in kind of mainstream medicine. And so massage seems like an easy way to get into that. And after that, I really felt like my body should be feeling great. And it wasn't from just all the massage I'd received. And definitely felt just really intuitively called to learn myofascial release, which I learned from John Barnes, but it was the type of thing, like I got a brochure in the mail and when I looked at it, I was like, I think this is what I'm supposed to be studying. And so did that for a good stretch of time, a lot of trainings and studying that, and really got into an understanding of how our subconscious can be really powerful and can really create these blocks in our life that prevent us from living as fully or as connected as we want to, or feeling joy. That was something that I struggled with some, was just kind of self-sabotaging myself out of feeling joy. And then I just continued to find people that I wanted to study with and got more and more into working with the pelvis, working with the internal pelvis for women. Just really love that part of the body and how it's so much our creative center, you know, both creating babies and just creation in general in our lives, whether that's for our business or art or writing, you know, all the things. I just think like the more and more that I freed up my pelvis and the wounds that were there, the more I felt like life and creation was able to flow through me. And so, yeah, that's the start of that.
I felt exactly the same way when I was drawn to the pelvic care work as well. It always just feels like, you know, the root and the center of us. So like all the work that we do in there flows outward and heals so many things. And I just can't think of another part of our body that really does that. Yeah. And I think that's why, yeah, women just feel like an unspeakable calling to you know, like tune into that area and heal the things that live in there, which I felt like there were so many things that live in there.
Yeah. I feel like that too. I feel like especially starting from childhood and having some instability in my life from the time, like, especially with my parents' relationship from the time I was 4 or 5, I feel like my root just kind of was always a bit unstable. And then I think what I think about a lot is when I was 19, I terminated a pregnancy, and it was without very much reverence to life and without even much thought of any of it, you know, like I would just felt so disconnected from that part of my body. And after that, continued to feel disconnected from it. Like, I think out of dissociation and survival, there was too much really suppressed grief there for me to feel it. And then, you know, that started coming up for me when I did want to conceive, like really, really strongly. Like, I had so much just grief over that loss, and also just over my total disconnection during that decision making. You know, like I just, and now it's so interesting because I feel like life is just so precious. And with this, I'm pregnant with my third baby and had felt like I was likely done having children, but then felt this little spirit just kind of hanging out outside my body, like wanting to come in. Like I really just felt this presence and decided to say yes, because it just felt so sacred that there was no way I could say no or not allow this being to come in. And that's entirely different from how I felt at 19. But, you know, I'm also 40 now. I've had a lot of life experience that has helped me to tune into what is important. And with this pregnancy, it feels like even though logically there were a lot of reasons that, you know, my family felt complete in some way or another, and I felt like really committed to my business and all of these things, but then it just felt like this is absolutely the right sort of movement forward. So yeah, I think having early childhood instability, and then just can be as small as a smaller sort of trauma, I think, in the pelvis, like just for example, like one sexual experience that wasn't a full yes, like not necessarily even assault or something, but just that loss of power. Like there's so many things we experience as women if we don't grow up with that reverence for our pelvis and for the female body and for life, that just leave us feeling, yeah, just disconnected. And I just feel like that's so much, like you said, it's the root and the base of us. And I really do feel like it's our connection to the earth, like just creation. I don't know if that makes sense, yeah. But that's what I think about a lot.
Yeah, I think what you're speaking to as well, it just makes me think and remember just how many things that we do store in there, in that area. It can be almost surprising the memories that come up that are related and all the ways that, yeah, all the little traumas in our lives, even the trauma of being a woman in this culture. And like you said, the lack of reverence, how we internalize that, and it can be felt in our pelvic bowl when we tune in. And yeah, it's just such a huge range of experiences that are felt in that area. It's like, it all just gets stored there. It's like this inward spiral. It just draws in everything. It's amazing when you start to connect there and realize how much we hold and how much we need to release.
I mean, more than any. Oh, go ahead.
Oh yeah, I was just going to ask if you feel like your births helped release a lot of that, or what do you feel like helped you feel some kind of clarity and clearness and lightness in that area?
Yeah, well, I think that experiencing a lot of intentional inward sort of healing and body work, both self-treatment and receiving from others, is primarily what set me up for that. And my births are, that's been interesting because I'm always just so intrigued by the movement of younger women, women younger than me that seem so in touch with their bodies and in touch with intuitive birth. And that was not me. So I have an 8-year-old daughter. And when I became pregnant with her, I didn't even consider home birth. I couldn't picture it. I didn't, even though I had older women in my community that I knew birthed at home, it was just so foreign to me. I just didn't have enough time with them. And when I tried to picture it, I couldn't, you know, it was like everything I'd kind of seen in mainstream culture is like giving birth in a hospital. And I think my husband and I both had some nervousness around birthing at home. And so I didn't have that. I think intuitively I had some knowing of my own power as a woman, but it was like also just pretty twisted and contorted by just how I grew up. And so I gave birth in a birthing center with midwives, but they were, you know, medical midwives. And essentially I got to 42 weeks and hadn't started labor. And so tried to induce labor with a castor oil smoothie. And then my water broke. And then I was on the clock. And so, you know, they had a very specific amount of time in which I needed to go into labor, full labor. And we tried with the breast pump. And basically, like, I went to the birthing center and labor just totally stalled. And then I was induced with Pitocin. And I really didn't want to be induced with Pitocin, but I really also at that moment didn't feel like I had any other choice, even though in hindsight, you know, had I known what I know now, I would have just gone home and let things progress naturally. And so I was induced with Pitocin. It was so incredibly intense. I didn't get any pain relief. You know, I didn't take any pain relieving drugs or get an epidural. And by the end, I was just so incredibly exhausted. I mean, it was eight hours of active labor, but just without any of those natural breaks between contractions, it just felt like it was one after another. I was vomiting, and it was just, you know, I had a doula there with me, but it was like, I felt so unsupported. And really the thing that that birth taught me was how hard I am on myself, because the whole time it was happening, I was just thinking, how could I have ended up like this? Like, I must have done something wrong. I must be doing something wrong. And, you know, the nurses and the midwife were, you're rocking it, you're doing great. Just wanted to punch them all in the face. I had so much anger about the situation and of course, like sadness and grief. And when my daughter was born and they put her up on my chest, I was so tired that I didn't even feel like I could hold her. And that is something I've had to heal a lot over the years. You know, it still comes up for me sometimes. Just I've mostly processed it, but I basically had to have my husband hold her and do skin to skin because I was worried I was going to drop her. You know, even though I was laying in a bed, I was just like, I could not even. And of course, like the whole cascade of natural birth had not happened. And so even though I felt very connected with her pretty quickly after those initial moments, that loss of that very initial feeling where I pictured, you know, I had listened to some, I definitely watched some birth videos while I was pregnant, maybe had listened to a podcast, I'm not sure. But I just pictured being like crying in joy and like being like, oh, my baby's here. And I was just like checked out. I was so dissociated and checked out. And so, yeah, there's been a lot of grieving over that loss of that very initial connection. And I feel like I've magnetized women to come and work with me who also have the loss of that connection, because that very first connection is so special and important, I think. And I do think we can repair it. But so that was my experience with my daughter. And so I have since learned just recently from being with a couple of my friends, Adelaide Meadow and Mandy Verghese, who are both trained midwives, and, you know, birth keepers. I basically had them look at my vulva and tell me what was like. I don't tend to look at the tissue of the vulva very often. I'm more just touching and feeling with my hands. So when I'm working with women, that hasn't been a primary thing that I do, is look and examine the tissue. But so I had them look at my vulva, and Mandy's take was that I'd basically been stitched so that I tore, and then I'd been stitched so that some of my internal tissue is now external. And I ended up with a hematoma, which, you know, is like a bruising, but my husband said it basically looked like there was a liver hanging out of my labia. And I'd always thought that that was just something that happened maybe from me pushing really hard, because at that point I was like, just wanted to have the baby, and wanted the baby to come out. And, but Mandy told me, you know, it might've been that you were stitched improperly and that created this hematoma. And that was kind of an interesting, you know, like, I have no fault towards those midwives, but it's just an interesting experience to, like, this far later be like, oh wow, you know, that's maybe how that played out. But the biggest takeaway from that birth was just learning to love myself. And I feel like my daughter came in with that medicine, and also learning how to be empowered. But my daughter, from the time she was, could basically speak, she would actually say to me, like, Mommy, do you love yourself? And it was just like, sometimes it would be totally out of the blue. And it was just like such important medicine for me to just learn to love myself, and no matter what, you know? And I feel like that's something that so many women struggle with, is just being so hard on ourselves, really being so critical of ourselves. And yeah, so that was my first birth. And then with my son, at that time, so he's now almost five, and in between my daughter and my son, I felt like I had a lot of healing to do of my pelvic area, both like emotional things around that, what I would consider a traumatic birth, and also the biggest thing that was going on with my pelvis was that I was diagnosed with cervical dysplasia and HPV. And you know, the medical provider's immediate advice was to get a LEAP procedure, where they take, you know, a electrified loop and essentially just sear off the end of your cervix. And at that point, I had a very clear, like, oh, hell no, you're not going to like cut off the end of my cervix. This makes absolutely no sense. And I think my whole experience with that first birth just taught me to have more distrust of mainstream medicine, which I already did. Like, I was already very naturally leaning. And, you know, I thought like a birthing center and midwives, for me, that felt like the natural way. But I realized very quickly that like they were just as tied in to all the mainstream medicine that I was critical of. And so with the cervical dysplasia, I'd been with my husband already at least 10 years. And so I knew that I had this, and he was my only sexual partner. I knew that I had this HPV in my system for at least that long, and that it had just remained dormant and never caused any problems. And so to suddenly be told that I had cervical dysplasia, I was able to just critically think like, okay, well, like this diagnosis is basically just describing that I still have more healing work to do in my pelvis. And so I said no to the LEAP procedure, and I knew that I wanted to be pregnant with get pregnant again. And so we conceived my son. I was also working with a Mayan abdominal massage therapist and holistic pelvic care practitioner and a craniosacral therapist. I was doing a lot of intentional healing work with my body, and just to clear all sorts of things, really. Like one of the sessions I remember with a craniosacral therapist during this time was a huge release of grief around losing one of my friends. She didn't pass away. We just had a falling out. And I was really holding on to that grief so strongly in my pelvis. And so I think that's the thing, you know, we can hold whatever it is that we can't process. It goes right into that bowl, our pelvic bowl. It's like literally just this bowl of holding space. And so I did all that kind of healing work. I did consent to a colposcopy where they take a sample of your cervix at like 5 months pregnant, which in hindsight, I'm like, what was I thinking? But at the same time, yeah. Yeah. So I worked with my friend who is the holistic pelvic care RVGO practitioner to really basically like meditate on me being the one who's making this choice to ease my mind, because the amount of fear that they were putting into me about having cancer, basically, not that that's their fault. Like I was the one taking on that fear, but I was having a hard time trusting that everything was okay with my body. And so I consented to this colposcopy and they found that already those, whatever the abnormal cells had cleared, which I knew was what was going to happen when I got pregnant. And often they'd say like, even through giving birth, that's what would clear those cells. But I knew even just getting pregnant, like, and then to think of them having, you know, what they wanted to do was sear off the end of my cervix, cut off the end of my cervix, and then have me get pregnant. Like when I then have scar tissue, and I hate that that's the normal standard of care in mainstream medicine. It's just so messed up to me.
I just want to say one thing for the listeners, and then I want to ask you a quick question about that. I want to link an Aviva Rahm article about this. She did a really great article about women who had done the LEAP procedure and then had issues with their birth. Their cervix wouldn't open because of the scar tissue. And not to put fear in anyone, but it's horribly dangerous kind of procedure. And it's led to sexual dysfunction for a lot of women and permanent nerve loss. But I wanted to ask, I have no idea, like what happens? Is there an issue if you have the cervical dysplasia on your cervix and then you birth your baby vaginally? Does anything happen to them? They don't get inoculated?
No.
I mean, it's different than if you had an HPV outbreak or something. It's totally different.
Yeah. And I never had any HPV like genital warts or anything like that.
Okay. Those are separate. Things. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't really speak to that, but I wouldn't say I'm even an expert in HPV, but my understanding is that our cervix is constantly kind of sloughing off cells. Yeah. Like that's just it's naturally regenerating. And so as far as I know, I don't think there's any issue having a baby, even if you still have cervical dysplasia. And often it can just clear those, because pregnancy is such an amazing pregnancy and birth are such amazing clearings, you know, for our body. Yeah. And so to me, that just makes sense that like, if I were one of these practitioners, which obviously I'm not, I would say like, okay, if you want to get pregnant, let's have you get pregnant and have a baby. And then let's reassess. Although at this point I haven't had another exam since that colposcopy, because I just have been trusting that I will know if there's something wrong with my body. And it's like when I initially got that diagnosis, I knew there was something, quote, wrong with my body, because I knew that I still had a lot of healing to do from my traumatic birth. And so it was clear that like my body just needed more time to heal, and that, you know, suddenly this virus is going to show up when I haven't had any new sexual partners and I've had it in my system for a long time. I just knew that if I was healthy and healing, that it would go away. And it did. And so the interesting thing with that second birth with my son is that I mean, I'm like embarrassed to say this, but I just have to be honest, is that I chose to go back to the same place. And I met with a home birth midwife. I had no concept of free birth at that time, like five years ago, or I guess that would have been 6 years ago when I got pregnant. And I met with a home birth midwife. At that time, it felt like we couldn't really afford it. Like, it felt very unreasonable to pay the amount that she needed at that time. There are very few home birth midwives in my area. And so I decided to go back to the same birthing center. And this time it was different. I labored with my son for only like 2 hours and 45 minutes. And I so wish I'd just stayed home, because I had basically an hour of labor at home, an hour of labor in the car driving to the birthing center, like just craziness to me. And then I was there for like 45 minutes and had the fetal ejection, and it just felt so easeful. So in a lot of ways, his birth was really healing for me, even though I still hadn't done that at home. And so, you know, in some ways, I think this birth is going to be a beautiful clearing for me of these other births, because I will be birthing my baby at home. And and also like with both my previous babies, I did one ultrasound with each of them. And this time I was like, I do not need to access the system in that way, like at all. I have much more general trust and faith in my body. And that's not to, the thing that makes me sad, it's not to shame anyone that chooses those things, but the thing that makes me sad is like, you know, I had a client recently who was, I don't know, 24, 26 weeks pregnant. And I just asked, you know, like, have you had any ultrasounds? She was like, well, of course. And, you know, it's like, she was like me when I was first pregnant. She had no concept of any other way. And so I'm just really glad there are women like you and so many other women that I know that are younger than me, but really like paving the way to spreading the word about different ways of birthing and really remembering our power as women and the way we can birth. And that we don't need all these things that, of course, like the medical industrial complex says we need, and including like the LEAP procedure. And yeah, you know, even just, and you and I talked about this, but even just body work or needing healing from someone else, I just think there's so much power to learning how to tune in with your own body and work on your own body. That's really, really important to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like you should talk more about this in your work, the like unassisted pregnancy and the birth, you know, sovereign birth. Because it really does feel like the initiation into that self-trust, like an unwavering self-trust in a way that you just can't. I mean, I haven't been able to access that before. And just a deep connection with your body, which it's like the system really breaks you of it in a standard prenatal birth scenario.
Totally.
It's such a deep imprint.
Yeah. I mean, I've had a lot of thoughts of, you know, especially with some of the breast care work, like taking my work online, the first way I did that was through myofascial breast care. And that was also related to just fear around my breasts. I don't even have a family history of breast cancer or any factors that make me more susceptible to it. But I just feel like there's so much just really pervasive fear in our world. And, and that was like work that I had to do myself to just get to this place of like, everything is fine in my body and in my breasts. And, you know, I wonder if, I mean, at this point, I don't even know how I would respond to a more serious diagnosis. I mean, I basically just don't go to the doctor or like get any sort of diagnostic test, because that's the thing, even with this pregnancy, like my husband is very intuitive. He's very skeptical of a lot of things, but he's also maybe wired to have a little bit more nervousness. Like he worries about me. He's like more of a worrier. And my biggest fear with this birth was, with this next birth that will happen in a handful of months, was being in any way, in having any sort of intervention, you know, having anyone just mess it up, mess up my flow and process. And for my husband, he had definitely some fear around, like, what if something goes wrong? And he was like, you know, he was totally fine with us not getting an ultrasound. But at first he was like, but wouldn't it be nice to just, like, get an ultrasound and they say everything's okay? And I was like, yeah, but what if they don't? And then they want to do 20 more tests. And in that span of time, I'm living in fear or just feeling like it was such a waste of my time and energy. I was like, I just, if anything presents itself where I need some sort of diagnostic test, I'm not entirely opposed to it. But until that happens, I'm not seeking out that kind of care, because it just, I've seen it time and time again, like women that go in and have an ultrasound or whatever it is, and they're told that something's wrong, and then they do a bunch more tests, and then everything might be fine. But it's like, in the meantime, they've endured multiple weeks of stress and fear, which I personally think can have a huge impact on your baby and your body. And
like, what would you even do in that scenario? I think that helps to just have a credit. If you're not going to do, if you're not going to abort your child, or, you know, like, are you willing to take medication for this thing or that thing? It just helps to have a little bit of a critical, and they can say things are fine, and then things can turn a different way.
Totally.
It's just in that moment. So yeah, I think it's that difference between internal connection and external validation, which this going through pregnancy in this way really does test your faith and your own intuition, which is a really intense path at times for some women.
It is. I mean, it's still even intense for me. Like, I have moments of, you know, it could be the littlest thing. Like, I just feel some sensation, and then I have an immediate like, oh, is everything okay? And then I have to just remind myself that I'm trusting my body to do whatever it needs to do. I'm trusting this baby. I'm trusting God, source, the universe. Like, it's been really interesting for me. And yeah, this time around, this has also been interesting because I, like I said, like, well, so basically I wasn't really even on Instagram for my business until, I don't know, a year and a half ago or something. And then kind of learned about this whole world of free birth and sovereign birth and all these, you know, it was like this different sort of world that I was like, wow, this all exists here. And like I said, I do have a lot of older friends, like with now young adult children who live in my community who had home births. And they definitely now, like, I can understand more of who they are and why they birthed that way. And they're great role models for me and great people for me to talk to. But this time around, it was kind of like, okay, like, who do I want to be at my birth? And I also think it could be pretty quick for me. And I really don't have any fear around it, but I definitely also want my husband to feel well supported. And so I knew immediately I wanted to ask my friend Tamsin, who she's trained as an ER nurse, but she's very holistic and herbally minded in her life and kind of struggles with that. She works in an ER, which, thank God, there are people like that who are willing to be a part of that system, I think, because I'm like, well, if there were an actual emergency, she is like, I can't imagine a better person to have on your side. You know, she's like an angel in that way, in that she does this work even though she hates the system and hates so many things about it. And really struggles with it, you know. So she's like, she's training in the innate postpartum with Rochelle Garcia Saliga, and she really sees herself as more of like a birth and death doula. And I think eventually will not be working in a hospital, but she's just such an amazing woman. And I knew I wanted to have her there because she's had her own initiation with her births, and she's just a really, yeah, she's someone that I knew I would want there supporting me. And then from that point, I was kind of like, well, I don't know if I need anyone else, if I want anyone else. I don't feel like I necessarily want to be entirely alone. I love being with other women. I love being supported by other women and body workers. But I was at this point where I was like, well, I think it's just going to be Tamsin. And I met with a pair of home birth midwives and just had an immediate like, no, this isn't going to be them. I knew I wasn't going to go to any sort of hospital or birthing center. And then my friend Tamsin said, I think you should meet this woman. She's trained as a traditional midwife. She's worked with a bunch of like Amish families, and she's a dairy farmer. She has a raw milk dairy and she raises a bunch of animals. And I was like, okay, I'll meet with her. And met with this woman, Lauren, and just within, you know, 20 minutes of knowing her and just seeing like her vibrancy in life and hearing her speak about how she wanted to support women in birth and really be a birth keeper, essentially, and not interfere. And everything is consent-based, no pressure for like any sort of diagnostic tests and things like that. And I just found myself like weeping because I felt like she felt like an amazing support to have for me. So I sometimes feel a little sensitive around some of the terms around like free birth and whatever you want to call it, because I'm like, well, I guess I'm not having a free birth, but I honestly do feel like it's a very sovereign birth. Like I'm choosing very specifically who I want there supporting me. Who knows if they'll even be there? Like I might just have a baby pretty quickly and they might not be there.
Sounds like it.
And I feel fine about that. But I think especially just for my husband, for my children, like having a friend like Tams in there that could help support my children if anything were to come up and those sorts of things. Like that's kind of what I've been thinking through. But I honestly feel really good about it. And I think I will talk a lot more about these things after this baby is born. But I also have the recognition that like, you just never know. And maybe it'll be really different than that. And I'm open to that. I just, at this point, I don't even regret anything with my daughter's birth because I feel like like you said, it initiated me into who I am as a healer. It initiated me into being able to hold space for women who've had traumatic births, which I think at this time in our world is really, really important. Like, I'm psyched when majority. I hear about someone. Yeah, I'm psyched when I hear about people who have these amazing births, but that isn't the majority. And so like they need people that can relate, you know? So anyway, I'll probably talk about it more once I see how everything goes. But right now I feel really, really good. And I feel like the most important thing about, you know, whatever you want to call it, like sovereign birth, is just that you recognize as a woman your power and your ability to birth without any assistance. You trust your body, and that if you want people there supporting you, you ask them to be there. And that's like absolutely how it is for me. I'm just, like I said, I love having women around, and I definitely am setting up some postpartum care for myself with some friends too. And it like really warms my heart to have people witnessing me and loving on me. So that's kind of my style.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really the ancestral way from everything I've read about history, is just that our home is filled with women, you know, tending to the home and various things. It's just, it's silly to be dogmatic about it. I guess I don't know anyone personally that's judgmental about if you have another woman there, but they're probably out there. And I think the majority of women do want some, and we just don't want to be sabotaged, which is so sad that that's just we do have to fear them now, because everyone has fear in their bodies about birth and doesn't, it's just not normalized very much. So I pray that you have the birth of your dreams, and yeah, that you feel so well supported and loved, and that you know that it's led by you at every step.
Yeah, thank you. I'm excited. And I'm really excited for my, I was going to say, I'm really excited for my kids to hopefully see their little sibling be born. That feels really, really special to me. And both my kids love babies, and my daughter is, you know, more and more curious about her body, and she's always been interested in mothering. And my son is so sweet in so many ways, and I just want him to grow up knowing, like, we've been watching some birth videos and every once in a while, and I want him to see all that too as a boy growing up, like, just to know how special it is. And I mean, it's like so much of it, I think, is innate. There was, I don't know if I've ever shared this more publicly, but there was a time when I was bleeding, and he came into the bathroom and he was like, what's that smell? It smells delicious. And like, he smelled my blood. And, you know, it's just like, it's just, it's biological that until we're taught that these things are gross or weird or whatever it is, like, it's just a biological response to understand how sacred bleeding is and how sacred life is. And so I just want him to witness that too, if it works out that way. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to be in our house and on our land and on our farm, and just like, it just feels, now it's so hard. I mean, I just absolutely can't imagine doing it any other way now, but it took me doing it the other way to get to that point.
Thank you for sharing all that. I think that's all very interesting. I want to hear about the work that you do. So are you still doing in-person work right now, or have you shifted mostly to online, or is it kind of both? How is that being pregnant and doing the body work that you do? Cause I've done that and I found it really intense. So curious.
It's been interesting. I am still doing in-person body work. I do that basically 3 days a week, and parts of some of those days might be virtual sessions, but it's definitely still like a normal way that I spend a few days a week.
Do you do holistic pelvic care, or do you do more than just body work plus that?
Yeah, I would say it's mostly myofascial release, including internal pelvic myofascial release, you know, working vaginally or rectally, and now kind of incorporating my own style and modality that I've told you I've been calling pelvic alchemy. But the holistic pelvic care, I don't know that I really use much of it.
Right. You draw from pieces of it, but you have your complete own modality and ways that you work that are unique to you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I don't really follow the kind of like the protocol of holistic pelvic care, but I definitely feel like I've drawn from it in maybe smaller ways. And so, yeah, being pregnant and doing this work is pretty interesting. I feel like I've had a lot of just really big sessions, like people that are having really big releases, and to think about being this clear channel and having this energy of other people kind of run through my body. And I've had a couple of friends that I think are pretty tuned in say, like, your baby is just, you know, meant to be kind of like clearing this energy too. And I'm trusting that that's the case, you know, like, it's definitely, you know, working with people who, it could be all sorts of things. Like, I've worked with women who had, recently who had postpartum psychosis. I've worked with people who've had stillborn babies. I've worked with people who've had miscarriage, lots and lots of pelvic traumas, or like traumas around pregnancy and birth, that I do have to, you know, I don't know that I could have done this 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. Like I've gotten to a place where I feel like I can do this work and both not let it take me into my own fear of what could happen for me being a pregnant woman, and also just really stay very clear so that it's running through me. But the other piece of all of this is that when I have this baby, I really want a lot of time and space with my baby. And so I have been shifting more of my work online, teaching women how to do their own self-care, and also doing some virtual healing. I've studied this modality called heart healing, which is meditative journeying, going into the heart. And mostly it's very deep and early, not always early, but it's inner child sort of healing, which for me has been so helpful. And I think most people need some work in that part of their subconscious. And so doing as much of that as I can too, but it remains to be seen once I have this baby, like how I will go back to work in person. I love in-person work, but this is another piece of kind of, you know, what I've learned through my mothering. But with my son, that was really interesting because my birth was very healing in a lot of ways, but I struggled with breastfeeding with him. And for 2 years, I had sort of chronic blocked ducts, and I got to know my breasts really well, which is like why I feel like I can now educate women about their breasts. But I had no issues with my daughter. And so to have it come up with my son was very interesting. And he did have a upper lip tie that we didn't really notice it. It was actually my husband who noticed it. I mean, it's like how could I have missed that? But once his teeth started coming in, he had a nice little gap between them, and we could see that the frenulum was, I think that's called the frenulum, was attached all the way on the hard palate on the top of the roof of his mouth. And then like within a week or two, he had fallen and just severed it himself. And I still think I had some issues with blocked ducts even after that. But again, it was like this initiation to getting to know my breasts. Also, though, what I was realizing and have been able to realize in hindsight is that I was kind of like pushing myself a little too hard to try to build my business up and get back to work. Like at that point, my in-person practice, I was still building it. At this point, it's like as full as I could possibly want it. And I'm booked way out and that sort of thing. And you know, maybe that would change taking a maternity leave, but I don't want to have to pump and be away from my baby like at all this time around. So, I mean, I probably will be away from my baby some, but with my son, I wasn't doing any extreme hours away from him, but I would maybe be gone for like a few hours at a time and have to pump. And I hated pumping, and I just want to like be with my baby this time around. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, I do a lot of this internal pelvic work, and now incorporating my own style of kind of meditative journeying and visualizations. I'm just thinking of this one. I mean, you know, I'm sure when you did this, when you worked in person with women, you would sometimes just be shocked by the stories that people have about like what they experience. And one of the most powerful sessions I had recently, where I used my pelvic alchemy modality or method, was working with a woman who came in with really severe incontinence. Like she was wearing, and she's given me permission to share her story. She was wearing, you know, like diapers, essentially. She's 46 years old, has a couple older kids, teenagers. And she just really had no control in her bladder. And she filled out her intake. And I immediately, when I read through it, I was like, there's something she's not telling me here. And I just ask, you know, like, is there any other trauma that you've experienced, especially in this part of your body? And she was like, well, I did, you know, I had one foot that kind of turned out as a child. And so I was taken repeatedly to this chiropractor who inserted his finger into my butt and made me bicycle my legs. And a nurse would like hold my legs and bicycle them while he was working rectally. And And that started from the time she was 4 years old and happened repeatedly. And it was like, okay, well, that, you know, like I can understand someone not wanting to put that on their intake because, you know, it's hard to think about. It's hard to think about how that could have been a decision that parents made or that this was a chiropractor that was doing this. And I don't know, you know, what she might have been diagnosed with as a kid, but like as an adult, her foot, you know, just barely turned out, like a little bit of turnout at her hip, it, like external rotation. It wasn't anything that seemed like it would be problematic. And on top of that, her parents were very religious and strict in their religion. And so I think that also, this whole experience, having her parents, you know, take her to this person and watch this happening and then basically like shame her for anything sexually as she got older, was very confusing for her. And so we just did this amazing first session of just really like taking her power back. And in part of my pelvic alchemy, which I do in person, but also virtually as well. When I do it in person, I'm sometimes working internally, but sometimes I just, like with this woman, I just had my hands on her womb space externally and then was talking her through this journey, basically. But part of this journey that I do is going into the pelvic bowl as if it's a canyon and kind of pinpointing the spot where whichever wound we're working with, wherever that is kind of wherever it lies. And for her, it was a loss of power. And she was just amazing. She had a huge emotional release. She was able to just say out loud, you know, speaking as if she was a child, but just able to say no and like yell it and feel, she could feel it like ricocheting off the parts of the canyon of her pelvic bowl, which felt really powerful. And then we just drew in her power, like from these people and these experiences that she had as a child. And it was amazing because when I first assessed her pelvis before we started, I tugged on her ankles and it felt like there was just nothing in her pelvis. Like she felt so void in that area. Like there was no energy there and she was almost too lax. And then afterwards, I could just, first of all, during the session, I could feel her energy like coming back into her pelvic bowl. And then afterwards, when I tugged on her ankles, she had so much more aliveness in that part of her body. And I asked her, you know, like, do you feel this aliveness in your body? And she said, absolutely. Like, it feels so different. And I've only worked with her once. And we didn't even do any internal work. We just did the meditative journey and, you know, a few external techniques. And she said she had a huge change in the amount of pain she felt in her body and also just felt so much more in general embodied. And there's been some improvement with her urinary issues and incontinence. So it's like, I think that's just it. It's like, we have these experiences. I mean, loss of power seems like a big one for a lot of women. There's been some situation where they've kind of, where their power has been taken from them or they've given it away. And that's one of the wounds that I work with. It's just like, how can we get that power and that energy back into your body? And I don't think I need to be in person, physically working with the person for that to happen. It just requires them able to go inward, which most people can if they're guided into the meditative journey in the right way. I think they can find that part of themselves. And in some ways, it's even more powerful for people to be like in their own home or space doing any of this work, whether it's the visualization and journeying or doing like internal self-touch, because I feel like you're just, you have that space. Like for some women, I don't have a problem emoting and letting my emotions flow really freely. But for a lot of women, that's uncomfortable. And if you're just in your own space doing whatever the work is, you can just let that come up more freely.
Oh yeah, that's a powerful story. I have so many things I want to say. Yeah, I feel back when I was doing this work a lot in person, I did something really similar with visualization and guiding. And I think it's important too, to, I was always very cautious about doing internal work when I knew that there was rape, sexual trauma, that kind of thing. I found that it wasn't helpful for me to do that work. And that's where I think the guiding them to do it is way more healing. Because you're not repeat, it's just, it felt like a repeating of a similar pattern. It just makes me think about, like you were kind of alluding to, with, I felt like always with sexual trauma and rape and all of those situations that women go through and that they still, of course, hold in their pelvic bowl. It is like this siphoning of energy continuously.
Yeah.
That there's like I remember this one woman a long time ago, and it was related to her father, and I could feel his energy so strongly in her body. Like he was actively still siphoning her energy, like a dark, like something dark that was still held there until she was able to release it. And I wonder how many women hold that, and they're being actively depleted energetically from these predators, and how important it is to release that. And it's like, I really feel so strongly about guiding women to do it themselves, especially in those situations.
Yeah.
Not that you can't do great work in person, but I think when pelvic practitioners go too quickly into internal work with them, it's just not helpful. So maybe you could speak to the work that you do with women guiding them, and then why it can be more beneficial sometimes than doing the hands-on work with them. I feel so strongly now that there are just so many more benefits to women doing this on themselves. And, you know, it sounds complicated when we explain like this visualization and it's very intuitive, but I know every woman has access to this, and it's actually very simple and intuitive once they're doing it. And maybe, you know, they just need some guidance and how to start, how to tune in, and just kind of like follow the wave of their body and all the, you know, symbols and images and all the things that come up to guide them to re-imprint that space. So maybe you could just explain, maybe like even lead into the class, because that's what you're doing with your upcoming class, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I love that story. I just have to say, and the idea of siphoning, because that's a really beautiful explanation of what I so often feel. And I just really quickly want to speak to that, because it can be someone like a predator or some sort of abuse or assault, but it really can also just be all the times as young women when we're first having sexual experiences. And this isn't the case for everyone, but so often I feel like most women have at least one experience where they can think back and remember, like, oh yeah, I had like a partial loss of my power in that situation, or I didn't quite know how to advocate for myself, or I just decided to say yes because that was easier, even though that's not what my body wanted in that moment, or those sorts of things. So hopefully younger women are growing up with more of that power intact, I would hope, but you never know. But that was when we first started talking. That was one of the things that I felt so much resonance with you about, is just women learning how to do this work for themselves, because I agree with you. I think it's so much more powerful when we can just touch our own bodies and do this healing work. And I also agree with you that sometimes pelvic practitioners can go too quickly, or just with not enough gentleness, not enough awareness, going right internally when people are not ready for it. And especially if they've had inappropriate touch at any point in their life. But even if they haven't, it's just like, you know, it's a sacred part of our body. And the more we can do that work ourselves, I think the better. So yeah, in the class that I'm leading, next Saturday, which is February 24th, it's a live 2-hour masterclass called Flow. It's internal pelvic myofascial release, basically. Some techniques that I've sort of developed myself, some that I've learned through my training in myofascial release. And I'm always surprised, but have to remember the time before I knew how to do this work. There are so many women that feel like, well, I just don't even know where to begin. And literally, it is so simple. You are inserting your fingers. You are breathing into that part of your body. You're letting your fingers sink in. You're tuning in there. And then you're just seeing what comes up. And in my classes, I do more things like visualization and kind of reading the energy of the group, reading the energy of what's coming up for people and talking them through it. Because I personally have found a lot of healing through myself verbalizing things or through someone, a practitioner maybe giving me a prompt. I'm just a very verbally oriented person. And so that's helpful for me. And I also love visualization. But even if you don't do that, even if you're just focused on the physical sensation, if you find a spot that is tender or hard or you feel some tugging elsewhere in your body, in my class, when you're working internally, you're essentially just putting a gentle, sustained pressure on that place until you feel it release. And you can feel it release. You can feel it release sometimes through your fingertips. You can feel it release in your body, or you can have emotion come up, like seemingly out of nowhere, and maybe not even connected to anything particular. Like, I know for me, I've had emotion come up that it's not necessarily connected to some specific pelvic trauma, or like I said before, like grieving the loss of a friendship, you know, just like the change that happens naturally. Or another big, you know, grief holding I've had in my pelvis is we had to euthanize my dog when my son was about a year postpartum, and that was really hard, of course. And that night I was holding my son, and I went to sit in a chair, which I don't know why I was sitting in a chair in the middle of the night, because he was co-sleeping, but whatever. Like, I got up for some reason and went to sit down with him in the dark, and I had moved the chair into the spot where my dog's bed used to be, because it was like this sad hole in the corner where we had to move his bed because it was all bloody. And I went to sit in this chair that wasn't there, and I landed right on my tailbone, and I was holding my son too. And so, you know, I worked on my tailbone immediately, because I know that to me, tailbone injuries are significant and worth attention. And I feel like your tailbone really is kind of like your rudder, and you want it to be straight so that you can just move through life with alignment, both metaphorically and physically. And that grief from losing my dog, like, yes, there was a pelvic injury, that the tailbone that I fell on, but also like this emotional injury that happened at the same time losing my dog just like found its way into my pelvic bowl and was held there. And so these are the types of things that sometimes happen. It's like, it doesn't necessarily even have to be fully related to a trauma that feels like it's a pelvic trauma. It can be any emotion, like I said, that your body just can't process at the time. And so you hold it in your pelvis. And so, yeah, I think like what I most want women to learn is that with a few kind of really simple instructions, you can learn how to heal your own body, and you can learn how to heal your own pelvis. And mostly people need just some help, either just tuning into that part of their body. Like, they have a lot of disconnect there. I'm thinking of one of my clients who has had multiple surgeries. She had a vaginal rejuvenation surgery and, you know, just essentially got like, you know, they just tightened everything up to the extent that like, she has a really hard time feeling that part of her body. And so as she's been doing her own internal work, she's like, it's just not the same as when I do it with you. But I think that's a situation where she's like almost there, stepping into her own power. She's trying, she's starting to do it. but she just needs a little bit more encouragement. And I think some women do just need, they need more encouragement that this isn't strange and that there's nothing wrong with it. And like this other client who grew up in a really religious household, like so many women have that experience where they've been shamed into like touching their body, even though this is not about sexual pleasure, this is about therapeutic touch. But like it can be so many different reasons. It can't even just be that like martyr of motherhood where like you have a million other things you're going to fill your time with other than doing your own internal self-touch, because those other things feel like easier than etching out some time for yourself to be alone and feeling into your body. And then some women are kind of like afraid of what might come up. You know, they're not like ready to have, they're not ready to release whatever those emotions are, or whatever that trauma is. And that's a good reason to do it yourself, because you can titrate the experience. You can just control your experience when you're doing it yourself. And if you feel like it's too much, you can start to learn how to listen to your body when it's saying it's too much and just go as slow or as do as little as you want. So that is really, that's really my goal with Flow, is like, I love coming together with a group of women and doing it all together on Zoom. Like cameras are off, but I think that's a really powerful experience. But through my class, you really should have the skills that you can just do your own self-healing anytime you want. And I have had women come multiple times now to this class. And that's the type of thing I would do, because I love that. I love like gathering with women and making this kind of sacred time and space for healing work. But you certainly just can learn everything you need to from coming to my class. And you also don't have to come to my class. You can just, like I said, and like you said, just you're inserting your fingers and you're just tuning into your body and feeling. Like, it really is as simple as that. It does not have to be complicated. You do not have to know your pelvic floor muscles. You do not have to know your anatomy. Like, and that's part of what I'm teaching, is really just because we're working with the fascia, it's through in between every cell in our body. And so I don't spend much time teaching any sort of anatomy, because I think it can get people too much in their analytic brain. And I'd rather have people just tuning into their intuition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree about that. I don't think it's helpful to know the complicated anatomy. Yeah, your fingers can inform you of where to go.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I feel like at home, do you feel like women aren't like pushing hard enough on the tissue, and maybe that's why they feel like it's not as effective as when you do it? Because I had to push. I mean, you do myofascial work, so maybe you do it a little bit differently. I felt like the pressure was way, way harder than one would expect initially.
I think that sometimes can be the case. I feel like it's a question I have around myofascial work or just body work in general. I feel like there are all these different layers that we can tune into as a body worker or as ourselves working on our own body. Just for example, like I've been to different practitioners who are trained by my same myofascial teacher, John Barnes, and some of them are much heavier handed than others. And I might have just as powerful of experiences with both. And I just find it interesting. Like, I do think it's like, there's not even a way to define it, but there's all these different layers we can tune into. And one might be more energetic and one might be more structural. Or just in general, like the way we hold trauma in our body is, and the way we release it is like peeling back all these layers of an onion. So I think that can be part of it. I think the position that women are in can be important. Like, I teach some of the work. I want women to try it at least somewhat in a supported squat so that they can really reach in a little bit further. I also think
that's a good idea. I've never done that before.
Yeah, that can be really helpful, especially for getting around the tailbone and kind of the backside of the pelvic bowl. Mm-hmm. And then I do, like in my class, I have a bonus module on using pelvic wands, because as much as I love to use my own fingers, like now that I have a pregnant belly, I have been using a wand a bit more for myself because it's just easier to reach. And I'm realistically not going to stay in a squat that long. Like I tend to do this work when I'm in bed at night, and I can still do some of it with my fingers, but I have a few different wands. The one I've been using more recently is just rose quartz, and it's like a straight wand, but they make so many that are curved. And, you know, like I'm not a huge fan of putting something that's made of silicone or plastic into my vagina, but I also think that the work is really important. So if that's what it takes, I, you know, again, it's like, I mean, this is how I feel with everything in life. Like my kids, like not having like food dye and, you know, eating all organic and all the things. It's like, we're just doing the best we can, and we have to choose. Sometimes we have to make compromises. And so I think if women are struggling to feel much, they might need to put more pressure, or they might need to get into a different position, or they might just need to try with a wand. I worry when people are using a wand that they're going to push too hard and kind of miss that sweet spot where they're going to access, I think, more like fascial memory, and instead just like maybe not injure themselves. But I'm just generally someone that thinks that there's more risk of working too deeply than working too lightly. But working more lightly means you have to be really patient, and you have to be a little bit more tuned in and trust that something is going to come up.
Yeah, I think a lot can be accomplished too with breath and visualization and intention, just as much as, you know, the strength of your fingers or something.
Yeah. And like I told you, I'm really excited to get your book. And I told you I wasn't going to get it until I felt like I'd fully mapped out my own modality, because just from you telling me about it, I was like, I think we've got some similar styles of what we are encouraging women to do. But now I think I would love to just read your book, because it sounds like we have, and this is like no surprise, right? Like when you start tuning into the body, like it's not like anything I'm doing is so incredibly unique that no one else could have come up with it. It's like when you tune into the body, we sort of channel the similar messages, right? Like we just learn what the body needs. And so I feel excited to read your book and more about your work, because like we've been saying, it's so simple. And I definitely agree with you, breath, like breathing into an area, learning how to breathe into an area can be so powerful. And it really does feel different as a practitioner when I can feel someone breathing into a part of their body or bringing their awareness there than when they're just like laying there, you know, thinking of their grocery list or whatever. Like it's an entirely different experience. So some of that, I think it has to do with the way I've learned that consciousness kind of runs through the tubules in our fascia. But I think it's also just breath is amazing. And like, I really like people to work with their breath, as it's like an internal massage, you know, or internal body work with their breath there. And this sometimes I bring in with my visualizations, like it's like the wind, it's eroding away any of those hard spots, just like the wind does. So yeah, it's an important one.
Yeah, I think we both have, I think that was the gift of massage school and just being a body worker, is you just, it's like, I don't even know how to put words to it all the time, but it's just, you get into this meditative state with people's bodies, and you do see the immediate shift in tissue with intention and like focus and breath, whether it's their focus or even your focus on an area. It's just, it's incredible. Like the body changes so quickly. There's no need to think that we have anything ingrained in our muscles. So I think that's just, anyone who's a body worker can probably attest to that.
Absolutely. And it takes a little more, you know, it takes a while to sometimes feel the confidence in your own hands as to what you're feeling. But that's the beauty of working on yourself, is you can feel it in your own tissue. So like, I think it's that way with the breasts. When I teach that with the breasts, I'm coming out with another couple courses, or a few courses, I guess, before I give birth, one on parent-child work. Like, I think it's just, I just don't think you need that much training to create an effect in your body or like your children's body. So I'm going to do a pregnancy class and an infant class and a parent-child class, because there's so much, like you said, with like, as a parent, if you can put your hands on your child's body with intention and love and listening, like, it's, that's what I think about a lot, is like, my hands are just listening and then I'm following what the body is telling me to do. And it can make a huge difference, you know, like, you don't have to, yes, it's helpful to know some techniques and that's what I will teach, but like, you don't even have to, like, you can just put your hands on your kid's body or on your own body, and you can create huge change with just a few minutes even. So that's really my goal, is like, how can we all feel empowered to trust ourselves, trust our bodies, and trust that we can create change within our bodies? Because that's been my experience, is like, I've been able to create change within my body. Also, of course, being supported by a lot of wonderful body workers and practitioners too. But in the recent years, it's really been like my own work on myself that has really changed my life, you know, and like really made me feel that power. And I just trust that that's the way it used to be. Like, at some point back in time, was that either people were putting their hands on their own bodies to help heal themselves, or they were, even if it was like a village, you know, shaman or healer, they would just put their hands on someone's body and just listen and have intention and have the person breathe, like all these simple things. And that's just such a problem with our world, is like, we've overcomplicated everything, you know, like, let's just keep it simple.
Yeah, I hated that in massage school, how there was, in the desire to separate it from, you know, prostitution, they wanted to like elevate and professionalize and egoize it all, when it's really just, I mean, obviously body workers carry such beautiful knowledge, but it's also touch, and we are all intuitively capable of that. And we should all remember that we are always the experts in all the areas, especially, you know, in our own body and our children's bodies. So I love that you have those classes upcoming. That sounds really cool.
I think they'll be good, and it's fun. It's a good challenge for me. You know, I used to write more poetry, and lately I've been putting my creativity into building a human and doing more of these classes and work. But it really, it feels good, and it feels great to know that it's just like, the more people that can feel empowered in their own healing, like, that really at the end of the day is my mission in life, is to help people learn to heal themselves and to just fully express their emotions. That feels like the another critical piece of it.
I just want to ask one more kind of side question, because you just talked about doing internal work when you're pregnant. And I'm just curious what are your kind of self-care, what does your self-care look like in relation to this pelvic work when you're pregnant, to kind of, you know, prepare for birth and all those things? What is, what are you doing these days?
Well, it's interesting. In myofascial release, as I've learned it, there's no reason to not work internally, but I know that's part of Tammy Kent's teaching, is to not do anything internally with when you're pregnant. And to me, that really makes no sense. I mean, she's teaching practitioners to work on other people, so maybe that's more of it. I've had so many moments of the pain that I'm experiencing in my pregnancy this time around that comes and goes is pain in one side of my SI joint, in my sacrum, and just doing some work internally has relieved that so immediately. And so I'm doing my basically like my internal self-care kind of as needed, but I would say once a week, you know, like just, I really like follow my intuition with that. And I will just say that, you know, what I feel in my, I haven't, before being pregnant again, I haven't, didn't really have much dysfunction in my pelvis anymore. Like I had worked through some minor prolapse and incontinence at various points. But I generally felt really good in my pelvis. But in this pregnancy, I feel a little bit more pressure in one side of my pelvic floor and my labia, where I had this hematoma and where I was kind of poorly stitched. And so I definitely am working more with that scar tissue. Also just really working a lot with my breath in that part of my body, because I do think some of the dissociation I felt in that first birth is still present there in some way or another. Like I really don't have a lot of energetic charge around that birth anymore. I've processed it so much, but I do sometimes feel that part of my body. Like I just have an awareness around it. So some of the work I do too is also just breathing into the opposite side of the body. Like when I have SI pain on the left side, I sometimes really focus my breath into the right side of the SI joint and just see if I can kind of shift what I'm feeling just through my breath. And I often use a little therapy ball. That's kind of like my go-to. I do some other self-care, you know, exercises and things. I think I've got my ball right here because I keep it in bed, but I've got a little squishy therapy ball that's like this. I'm squeezing my therapy ball.
I'll have you send a link so women can check that out.
Yeah, I really love the squishy kind of myofascial therapy balls, and I do sell them on my website, and they came with one of the courses I released last month with my head, neck, and jaw course. I did like a myofascial self-care for daily alignment, so it was more of like daily actions, daily kind of stretches and things like that, and the ball is included with that class. But with this kind of ball, I essentially just put it anywhere on my body that I feel needs a little release, and then lay on it for 3 to 5 minutes, sometimes 10, and that's like the easiest thing in the world to do, and I find it makes a big difference. So one thing for me with my own body, it's interesting because when I'm working with someone, it's easier for me to take a step back and really see their body globally. And when it's with my own body, it's much more often that I'm like, oh, my left SI joint hurts. Like, what am I going to do to fix that left SI? You know, and like, I know that it's a full body thing that's going on. So that's a really good exercise for me with this therapy ball, is like, where can I put this ball that might relieve my SI pain if that comes up? That's nowhere near my SI joint, you know? So that might be like the side of my thigh, like my IT band. It might be in my shoulder, you know, like really just trying to keep that broad perspective that a fascial restriction can tug on any part of your body the way like a snag in a sweater, if you pull on that, it can pull on the whole rest of the sweater. So that's kind of my general self-care right now, but definitely the internal work. The other thing, trying to decide if I want to speak to this, I think I will. The other thing that I have been doing more often in this pregnancy is, and is probably worth a mention, is pretty regular self-pleasure. Like that is not something that I did in either of my other pregnancies. I was very lucky in my early days of becoming sexually active that it was very easy for me to orgasm through penetrative sex. And then when I became pregnant with my daughter, that changed. It's not like it never happens, but it just really changed. And I don't know what it was, because it wasn't even that it changed after her birth. It was that it changed when I was pregnant with her. But the beauty of this experience for me is like, up until that point, I really never learned how to pleasure myself because I never needed to. Like often had a partner. And so
that's so rare. I'm curious how many women can actually orgasm that way just initially. So you started
I don't
out
know.
rare and
yeah,
then your nerves
I
get
did.
Rearranged in pregnancy and birth.
Yeah.
So.
And it's been really interesting as a, you know, like a 40-year-old woman, like just in the last few years, like to come into this whole different, you know, I know I'm talking about like therapeutic touch of my internal pelvis, but this pleasurable touch is also something that I've been exploring a lot because it's like this new experience for me that I actually really love. And so that's been like a part of my self-care too, is like, so basically like when I was pregnant with my daughter, I had a pretty long stretch of like very challenging to orgasm. And so like that was not happening regularly in that pregnancy. And maybe even with my son's pregnancy as well, it was like after he was born that I really was like, I gotta figure this out. Like, this is not a good situation for my health. And then once I sort of started discovering that I could pleasure myself, it was like this amazing, it was another empowering moment of like, okay, like I can just also do this. And this feels really great. And you know, my husband and I have been together a really long time, 17 years. So we have like I would say we have great intimacy and like easy to talk about anything that's going on. And he's just a wonderful lover. Hopefully my family's not going to listen to this. and so, you know, that's beautiful too. But like the self-pleasure, I think is like, it's kind of a special thing I'm bringing into this pregnancy and makes me feel empowered in a different way.
That's great that you found the gift to that. It just made me think too, self-pleasure is part of, you know, the pelvic work. It's like, we can't separate the therapeutic from the pleasure. And that's what I like too about when women can do this at home. It's like it can lead into that at home in a way that you just wouldn't, obviously you wouldn't do in a, in a one-on-one session. That they have to be compartmentalized for reason.
Sure. And so I also love, I love teaching women too, like, especially women that have pain with penetrative sex, for example, like you can also teach your partner to do a little bit of this therapeutic internal work. It's, you know, different than what is like typically thought of as like foreplay, but, or whatever you want to call it. But like, sometimes women just need to also be touched therapeutically first. And, you know, maybe the release is not always an orgasm. Maybe they need to like cry and then they can have penetrative sex and have an orgasm. You know, like the release is, it's different to cry, and you have to have a partner that can hold the space for you if that's what needs to come up. But there are times when that's what comes up for me with my husband. And like, he's an amazing person because he just has always been able to hold me in my healing and not, you know, make it mean anything. If like, sometimes I've had times when I've like had an orgasm and started crying, you know, like it's just, sometimes it has to be a release in all these different ways. And so, yeah, it's beautiful also to include our partners if they want to do that too.
I think for women who do have a lot of sexual trauma, it's like they have to.
Yeah.
And if their partners can't hold that, how can they open for those men? It's like,
absolutely. Yeah. For sure.
Okay. I think you mentioned that your class is on the 24th.
Yeah. So my internal pelvic myofascial masterclass is February 24th, and it's live, and then there's a recording. And I don't know when this podcast will come out, but it's on sale through the time of the live class for an early bird price of $55. And it's great if you can come live, but it's also great recorded. And then basically after that class, I'll have a few weeks before I start a group offering of pelvic alchemy. So delving into these four wounds that I've sort of determined through meditative journeying and doing that in a group experience. So there's a self-led course with modules in conscious healing and then this subconscious meditative journey for each of the wounds. And there's a private group to have some community. And there are 4 live calls, like 1 live call a week on Saturday. So that's also something that is coming up based on what we've been talking about. And yeah, it's been really nice to talk with you.
Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your stories and your wisdom about this. I just feel like your work is so profoundly important. And I hope that women who listen to this will, you know, say yes to connecting in and working to heal all the things that we hold as women so they can feel that lightness and joy that they don't even realize is possible.
I hope so too. And that doesn't mean that they have to do anything else with me. They can do it all on their own. But thank you for your podcast and for sharing all these beautiful birthing stories and just having these conversations. And, you know, I sometimes have people say things to me like they're like surprised by my vulnerability or just being honest about things, but it doesn't actually feel like a big stretch for me. It just feels like what I'm meant to do on this world is to share these intimate stories. So, yeah. So thank you for giving me a platform and space to do that. I really appreciate it.
Of course, I love talking with you. Thank you for listening and being here. If you enjoyed this episode, I would love to have you share it with a friend and review this podcast. It really helps to have more women find these conversations. You can check out all I offer, including herbal elixirs for wild mothers and women, my book on pelvic healing, and show notes for these episodes at bethanywild.com.